All right.
There's an actual Facebook group called Americans Against the Republican Party. I guess I knew that. You're in the air with Radio Zero. Oh, that was dead air.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. All right. So is this going to be a quick one or no?
Well, maybe we'll see. We got about a half hour before we get the phone call that
that's
somebody
right.
needs to get picked up from school.
Chris Schneberger needs to get picked up. He asked if he could call in because he needs a ride home. He's been very active on the internet lately. Okay, so welcome everybody. What's the matter?
Nothing.
You swore into the radio. You swore into the internet.
I think it's okay.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So did you notice the emoticons? The Star Trek emoticons?
I think I did a wow, and it was hard to tell, but I think it was Mr. Spock.
Yeah, they're still there. It's weird because because I liked other people's posts. So what's weird to me is like when I saw it, I was telling some class this too. When I saw the red, you know, I went to do the love thing on somebody's post because it's like all love, I love that. Oh, I love that. I don't even like stuff anymore. I love it. And then I was like, what is that? Is that the rock hand? Is that like rock and roll? Like, do they know I'm in a rock and roll band? And then I looked closer and I was like, that's not a rock hand. That's a Spock hand, you know? And then I looked next to it and it's like Captain Kirk. Is that what that is? And next is Spock. But it was weird that Spock would have a love hand because, you know, he's supposed to be unemotional, right? So I don't know. I don't get it. I get the Klingon on the right for the angry thing, and I don't know. I only know old Star Trek. So the guy who's sad, the guy who's in Roots.
Oh yeah, LeVar Burton.
Yeah, he's like, why is he sad?
The guy who's in Roots.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know his name, but I know he's in Roots. And I remembered LeVar Burton's name too.
And so what's strange is, yeah, depending on how old you are, LeVar Burton is the guy from Reading Rainbow. Oh, the guy from Roots. Oh, the guy from Star Trek. From Star Trek: Next Generation. You know, it is interesting. He's touched many generations.
Did you hear? And actually, I was fielding I was looking at email. I was reading email from Sherry. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna say no to this email, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden I listened, I'm like paying attention, closer attention to the radio. And I'm like, she's on the radio right now while I'm reading her email. That was really weird. And she was on the radio talking about Star Trek fandom with Laura Kennedy. That was really neat. Okay. Yeah, that's not even, Star Trek. Yeah. Oh, those were so. You know what? Actually, I feel like I'm a liberal woman because of Star Trek.
Because you're a liberal woman? Oh, because of Star Trek.
Yeah, I feel like I learned all my world values from Star Trek. I worry that I learned all of my values from Star Trek.
That this isn't something that's naturally a part of you. It was just because you watched Star Trek.
That's what I worry about. Yeah, like that was like
that's a valid worry. I mean, we're not a valid worry, but it's a potential.
Except that I didn't watch it until like I was in college, probably. So,
I
watched the reruns. Yeah, I didn't watch it when I was little, though.
Really?
I don't think. Maybe I did.
So I watched it once when I was really little. And it was when the episode with the butthead people that just talked through
the
their
crap
minds.
Out of you, right?
Yeah, and so I didn't watch it again for about another 5 years when I was in junior high or something.
Why did it scare you?
Just those pulsing butt heads and them kind of staring. You know, they would just stare and the head would pulse.
Now, what season was that,
that's,
would you say?
I think that's the pilot.
Like
that's
the
actually
pilot.
Before.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm not saying that I watched the pilot. What I'm saying is in reruns, for some unfortunate reason, the draw, I got, I'm going to watch this show. Oh! And then I couldn't watch it for about 5 years.
Scary cat.
Yeah. Well, I was probably a little too young.
All right. So let's go through. So I decided to just ask if there are any requests for Radio Zero from the three people who listen to it. And it turns out that there are more like seven people who listen to it. So hi, Conan.
You already name checked him last
time. Did I?
Yeah.
Well, he needs to be name checked again because No, I don't think he has anything. I hear he's too busy rocking.
The other, you know, not to disrupt your momentum here, but the Star Trek thing is that there's another important thing about our band and Star Trek.
Yeah. What is it?
That? Do you remember? Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh, my God. That was the first...
Like one of our earliest poster children shows
in Chicago at Phyllis's Musical Inn. It was, and Star Trek with the woman driver, right?
No, she wasn't a woman driver. She was a telepath, but
okay.
Or an empath. Sorry, excuse me.
No, it wasn't Deep Space Nine
at their computer.
Yeah. Ow! And we heard it. That was playing that same night, so we couldn't watch it.
We weren't.
Our path forked.
That's right.
From geekdom to
old school.
Super geekdom.
It took me a long time to warm up to Next Generation.
Oh, yeah. I still haven't. I didn't watch any of those.
I watched episodes of them.
I like, but I like, who's the bald guy? I like him.
Yeah, the bald guy. That's all you need.
I don't know. I don't do names. I don't do names. Bald captain, girl captain. But I will tell you this.
Sorry, I don't do names.
Yeah, it's what I say in class. I do. I'll call somebody out by their shirt. You. I don't have their names yet. There's like 24.
Bike. That's the one time. It was like, yeah, I'm going to stop to talk to you. You're yelling. You don't know my name. And on top of it, you're just calling me bike.
Were you on a bike?
Yeah, I was on a bike. Hey, good. You. Hey, bike. 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 And I'm like, I'm not stopping to talk to you.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the history. And Star Trek 50 years old yesterday. Our record Daisy Chain Reaction 25 years old. So many
coincidences.
I was going to talk about how hot I thought Captain Kirk was, and I don't say he's probably the only person except for you that I think is really really hot.
Really?
He's like, or
Leonard, not Leonard Nimoy.
No, I wasn't a Spock. You're
talking about which one? Who played Captain Kirk? I'm unfamiliar. William Shatner. What did he ever do anything else?
No.
No. Okay.
I should be like thinking like Robert Redford was hot or something, right? Or who do women my age think was hot?
Oh, that Robert Redford. He's so dreamy. No, yes,
a little older than me.
Your age.
The guy from the Buddhist, Richard Gere. Yeah, sorry. No, I don't think so. No. No chin, right? I don't like him. I like the chin.
Wow.
Okay. But nice that he's a Buddhist. Love it. Okay. Let's move on. Josh Davis wants to hear you talk about new music. Because you listen to it and I don't. Josh Davis didn't say that. He said he hasn't the slightest what we listen to via the
kids.
I think
I talked about this already. The only music I've been listening to that isn't my own.
Yeah. And no, isn't Sean Cassidy's.
And that's not new music either. That was that Narvel Feltz stuff.
Oh, man. Narvel Feltz, great punk rock artist.
No,
we were driving. So
we talked about this already.
Yeah,
on the show.
We were driving.
We haven't gotten over Narvel Feltz yet.
Recap. We were driving to Memphis or Nashville, one of those Tennessee towns. They're both the same. Just kidding.
We talked about this on the show. Just go back to the spring.
Yeah, go through like the hours and hours of us nattering.
It was when we went to the Civil Rights Museum and everything. We heard Narvel Feltz and everything. So I'm still listening.
I would listen to that. It's country music. I would totally listen to that.
And so this is the thing, is he did have a minor hit in the 70s. Mm. And this was the stuff we heard, and the CDs I got are his 50s and early 60s demos.
If both of us like that, why aren't you writing music like that? Or why aren't I writing music like that?
I don't have any free time right now to write a Narvel Feltz song. Yeah, I don't have any new music.
I did listen
to that new Nick Cave song, and it made me really upset. So I don't know if I can listen to that.
I listen to my students' music. There's some Parachute Boy Band or something. Parachute Month. I don't know. Some band here in ISU.
I'm not good at names.
Yeah, I'm not good at names, but some kid named Tim has got some kind of band. All of my students are like there's Shelby and Jackie. These two, they're not even my students anymore. They graduated from being my students. Man, those girls can sing very good. Very, very well. They can sing very well. Okay. So there you go, Josh Davis. No answer for you at all. We listen to
no
NPR.
For you.
We listen to NPR just constantly. It's like constantly on in our house. So much that like I think that our children have, you know, pretty good vocabularies, right? And I think it's because of NPR. I mean, I think it's because we just have that going on in the house. You know, there's that study, you know, that like children in different areas are exposed to more. And when I say different areas, I mean poor areas and rich areas and stuff.
Oh, man, we should talk about that.
Yeah, are exposed to different amounts of words as they're, you know,
yeah,
as they're growing up.
There was also a study about how radio and television, that speech doesn't have the same effect as people talking on children.
Okay, so did they test it with NPR? Or was it like, you know, hey, how's it going? It's 79 degrees out there in the big city. And hey, what do you think about rock music? Oh, I love it too. Here's some more Prince. That's not Prince, but right. Like,
I wonder what kind of talking on the radio. Study now.
Oh, okay, good. Good for you. Good.
Like that social kind of behavioral.
No, wait, you don't disbelieve the study that says that kids in poorer areas are exposed to less words. Like less talking and stuff.
But that's part of the problem. There are like daycare problems, the kids are spending less time with a parent.
Yeah.
And they're watching TV.
Right.
And they don't hear enough words. There's not enough speech in the household. Because of, yeah, I believe that.
That study. The Teletubbies didn't have any words at all.
That's right. But see, that's, of course, if you believe for some reason that the Teletubbies are somehow good for children.
Yeah.
Keeping your children zombified, I guess. Yeah, yeah, that would be, but I'm
surprised. Were we? Oh, anyway, we listen to NPR constantly. And there's three NPR stations within reach of us too. We can listen to the Peoria station, and we can listen to the local Bloomington NPR station, which is awesome. And then there's WILL over in Champaign, AM 580. So
yeah, I can't listen to that anymore. I used to listen to it when we lived in Champaign, but now it's AM. I can't. The fidelity bothers me now. All of a sudden, it's like I had no problem with it before, but now.
You're so used to.
I'm actually to the point now where I'm a little. I won't go into detail, but there are some sonic engineering issues between the two FM NPR stations, where sometimes I will be unhappy with one of the stations. Like if you go bounce back and forth, you can actually hear sonically how different they sound, even though they're playing the same material, like the same program.
Yeah, yeah.
And that bothers me sometimes. So that's how bad it is right now, is that listening so much that I can tell. Like if I'm listening to Morning Edition on one station or the other, just by its sonic characteristics, even though they're the exact same program.
Right. Yeah, you can hear. One of them is more crackly because it's further away. Yeah, no, I know that's not what you're talking about.
With bass and low end. And
but anyway, Josh Davis, that's what we are listening to. We listen to people talking.
I don't read fiction. I only read nonfiction. I don't listen to music.
I don't listen to jazz.
I only listen to NPR.
Okay. All right. Sean Bliss wants to know. Wait, should we? I want to put these. That'll be a fun thing to answer. Let's answer the scary Kevin question first. Okay. Kevin puts a link to an artist in residence stranded at sea on a bankrupt container ship. Did you read that?
I didn't read it.
It's in this great art blog, like Hyper Allergic. I think I get like emails every day from that, and this was not one of the top stories though for me. I thought,
is it true? Is it for real?
September 7th, yeah. So artist residency hosted on a freighter crossing the Pacific Ocean has turned into a bizarre existential art piece in itself. So August 23rd, British artist Rebecca Moss boarded the Hanjin Geneva for, this is a link, 23 Days at Sea, a residency sponsored by Vancouver's Access Gallery. So she was supposed to dock in Shanghai roughly 3 weeks later, but on August 31st, so that's like 8 days after she boarded the ship, and she's supposed to be there for 23 days. 8 days after, the Korean shipping company that owns the vessel declared bankruptcy. And so ports now are barring it from entry because it can't pay the docking fees. So the ship's crew and hundreds of shipping containers are stranded on this ship outside the coast of Japan, or off the coast of Japan. So this artist is, so he's asking if this is it's a funny article, you know. This made me like look up artist residencies anyway, because I was trying to figure out like how I would explain what an artist residency is to my dad, you know.
Oh yeah.
So I looked it up on Wikipedia, and but then I looked it up. So I found like a critique of different artists in residencies, like an artist working at NASA and like, you know, making colorizing, like Photoshop-ly colorizing like pictures from the Hubble telescope. And then there was a critique of her, and then somebody else using like the molecular little things that you get on butterfly wings and moth wings and stuff that make the different iridescent colors, right? They had an artist working with that stuff at some other lab. I'm really bad with names. Sorry, everybody. But, you know, one of the artist who was working with the color, like, you know, had a great experience and brought up a lot of unanswered scientific questions, right? And the other artist was like a schlamazel. and the writing itself, I was like, ugh, like whoever, I was like, what website is this? Is this for kids? What is this? You know? And then I looked at the ads on it, and the ads were all like, you know, check to see if you have this one thing that will tell you if you have a heart attack, if you, you know, a heart attack is coming. And there was another like, look at the biggest penis in the world and stuff. So yeah. So here, the end of the article is funny because it's, you might also consider art historian John Edwin Mason's take on the whole thing. On Twitter, he opined, "No, this is not a metaphor for the art world. Why do you ask?" That's funny. So the artist is sitting on there's like shipping containers filled with different things. One of them is some of the containers contain animal skins, she said. What did they die for?
Oh. Yeah, why can't they just sell off all the stuff on the boat? They can't because they're
client. Yeah, that's they're supposed to be shipping it.
That's interesting. That show Silicon Valley. One of the guys gets stuck on a container ship that's going across.
A lady from your school hung out in the North Pole, right, or the South Pole.
I can't remember where she went. Antarctica. I think she went to Antarctica.
And like you know, audio taped sounds from there.
Oh, you're talking about, yeah. Oh, you're not talking about the thing that with Terry, who died.
Oh yeah, no. See, you're really bad at names now today too. Yeah. Anyway, what do you want? What are you asking us, Kevin? We already graduated.
He just thought it was funny.
Yeah, it is funny. He says there's some kind of metaphor here, but I'm not sure what. All right, so let's think about this. Stranded at sea. She was going to do art, so she's being paid to do art, but now the vehicle that she was stranded on has run out of money. But the people who put her there should be able to get her off, I would think. But that's so, you know what? This is a great music business lesson here. You got to have in your contract, you got to make sure. You got to make sure that, you know, just in case the container that you're like say for instance your distributor goes under, you know, I think you're right, Kevin. I think there might be I'm figuring this out now. There might be a metaphor here. Yeah, right. So let's say you know your distributor. Let's say you delivered 250 records to a distribution company. Let's say in Chicago, and let's say they go out of business. Let's say they're shutting their doors.
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe that extreme. Maybe it's a true story. What, were there only 200 records? And so are the records like, is the artist a metaphor for the records? Like, what do we do?
All I can think of is it's a great opportunity because there's certain expectations and then something very weird happens. And then that means that you're going to have a great story and probably
some good art.
Yeah, like somebody's actually aware.
Yeah, hyper allergic is aware
it's
of
breaking
it.
Out it's, of yeah. out of its one little
out of its art world.
Yeah,
very cool. Oh, there's two replies. Did he write? Oh, I said Kevin Hamilton. This is I tagged him. Like I just tagged him now in this radio show here. This is causing me to look up the exact definition of artist in residence. I was looking for something that he even wrote two things. He's writing right now. Maybe he needs a ride home too. I'm trying to find an example of an artist in residency work that had a large impact on a non-artist population. So I said, can you provide that? And he said, well, not all are intended to. The ones that are tend to be focused on performers who develop plays, music, etc., with folks in the area.
Just a simple one.
This is more. Yeah. Mostly these residencies are the modern day equivalent of hermit huts and other religious retreats. So maybe when we have our arts technology retreat, we can have it on a shipping container. Are you going to say something or are you yawning?
I'm yawning. I'm sorry. We ate Indian food for lunch today.
This is like, we get to like hang out with our old professors. It's like the greatest thing ever. You know, is that how people are going to think of us though? We're not like them. Maybe they will.
You mean like students seeing a student 10 years later?
Yeah.
Well,
no, I'm saying that when I get to talk to my professors, my previous professors, it's like, you know, it's I'm growing in experience and knowledge now, and I feel like, you know, I have more questions to ask them. So I must have had really good professors. Okay. I'm going to move on because somebody's, Chris Schneberger, needs a ride home. Bob Donlin asks, what's different about preparing for this tour than the last one? That's too long to answer.
I can't even remember.
Do you know that we used to be driving around in the van and we had to find out where the club was. So we'd have to stop somewhere. We'd have to look for like a gas station where we could get off and we can find a payphone and call on the payphone. Remember, call the club on the payphone. Do you remember?
And honestly, for directions. We had a cell phone towards the end
near
of our
the
major
end of it.
Touring.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
Our full time touring, but yeah, up until then, there was not a lot of.
Yeah, we didn't have a cell phone.
And the maps, you know, we had maps.
Yeah, I used to follow with my finger along
paper
the map. Paper maps, right? Exactly. But preparing for this tour, we don't know yet.
Part of it too is just how like these shows were kind of booked. Like what, 6 months in advance? It's crazy now.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
We would, like for certain tours, I think in the old days, we would be hearing right now about shows less than a month away.
We'd be on tour and Ellen would call us and say, hey, do you want to extend this tour for 2 weeks and go on tour with the Screaming Trees?
US tour was like that.
Yeah.
We had like a month planned and it just kept going.
Hey, do you want to stay for another 2 weeks?
We were out in California and was like added stuff on to the end of the tour a month and a half later or whatever.
Well, this is a big firm, big booking firm that we're using right now, right?
Prep, I mean, it's all boring stuff. You know, it's just like, and so like people email, hey, can you guys play this show? Oh, can you do this? And it's like, no, because it's like freaking preparing for D-Day. And it's not like our lives are exceptionally complicated. It's just that we're not 20-somethings who are like, oh, hey, yeah, Friday. We'll practice Friday. Oh, yeah, we'll practice this weekend. Yeah, we can't.
The kids get in the way.
Yeah, and it's not even the kids. It's everything. It's work and all this kind of stuff. And so the amount of planning that's required...
For us to play a show is just insane.
We're not... It's not like this is freaking the Rolling Stones going out for 2 months... 3 months across continents with 18-wheelers driving everywhere. It's just trying to get four people, five when we're on the road, together in one place at the same time, and then also practice the songs. I'm just going to sound like a whiner here, but it's...
Yeah, you are. I'm going
to
move on.
That's what's different about it, though. Yeah. It's like, wow.
It's been really hard to coordinate. Okay.
And it's not because there's something exceptional about us. It's because, holy crap, yeah, when you're not... a full-time, poor, 20-something musician, life is really freaking complicated. And I don't know how people... I mean, we got away with it. I know how we got away with it for a while, right? But it's like...
Got away with it for 10 years.
Yeah, I have no idea. Well, yeah. I mean,
how did we do that?
Well, we didn't have kids, and we lived in a cheap place.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to live in a cheap place like Champagne.
That helped. So that's what I said this back, you know, 25 years ago. It's like when we talked to New York bands and stuff like that. It was just like, and they're like rolling stuff out of a rehearsal space and everyone lives in a closet. And it's just like, I couldn't imagine being in a band in any kind of urban area. It was impossible. And so now it's like, I can imagine being in a band and having, you know, having kids and stuff, but that's why people who have kids aren't usually in bands.
Yeah. Okay. Meanwhile, all right. Michelle Winstead Roth would like to have an in-depth discussion of your tour wardrobe. What are you going to be wearing?
I've gone the route of having a uniform in my life for me.
So
she asking.
Yeah,
she's not
asking
about my wardrobe.
She is asking about you.
Well, I wear black work shirts.
Where do you get them from?
Well, I try to expand out, but I always wind up back to the red cap work shirt is the one that works the best for me.
And it's for people who don't know what a work shirt, everybody knows what that is, right? It's like you kind of look like it's the Chicago scene, like gas station attendant sort of style. So you kind of look like a gas station attendant.
The thing is,
he's very particular about these
touring,
shirts, though.
So the reason why it works really well for touring and then just everyday life is that by its design, first off, it's made to be cheap. So I don't feel like I'm spending money on clothes because I'm cheap. But then also like ironing, washing, all those kind of things are much easier. Well, you don't need to iron. So this is the thing is I have some cotton ones, 100% cotton, but I always go back to the other, you know, 60, 40 or whatever they are. And they, you know, they just come out of the dryer finished and ready to go. And then if I sweat in it, I can take it off and it dries off.
And you got an undershirt underneath them always too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't want to get, especially for live touring, like for me, you get chafing.
On your boobies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially then, as you get older as a man. Uh-huh. And that's the other thing about the work shirt. And it's not all work shirts. It's just basically black shirts with two pockets is also the man boobs. You're less likely to notice the man boobs than if you're wearing like a tight t-shirt or something. You know, it's kind of like, I'm not going to be booby sausage boy up on stage. I'm at least going to be, oh, it's a chubby guy wearing a work shirt is better than, ooh. I feel like I can imagine what he looks like with his shirt off, which is never a good thing for me, right? You know, it's like...
What kind of pants like are you? Where are the pants
Doughboy.
From?
Well, this is the problem. So I love the work shirts, and I always try to get the red cap pants or work pants, but those never work for me. Like once every 5 or 10 years, I go, I should be able to wear the you know, mechanics pants along with the shirt, and never works out. They're like staticky. They don't... fit right. They
how
feel
much are
weird.
The how much are the shirts?
I don't know, they're like $15
okay.
at most.
And then and
like
so
that.
The pants don't work for you. So where do you get your pants?
So then I buy. So I usually buy. I kind of moved out of. I started buying jeans actually, but not blue jeans. I never wear blue jeans.
From where?
Anywhere. So like if the Gap has them, although I'm less likely to find something that fits me at the Gap now. Banana Republic. I'm too old to wear clothes from there for a while there, I think we talked about this, I could get stuff at Express.
Yeah.
And they fit because they were lying about their waist sizes.
Yeah, yeah. They do that with the women's clothes too.
Yeah, but that stuff doesn't fit me anymore. And so yeah, I've got like old man butt problems where like your butt is smaller than your stomach kind of thing. Like, so the pants fall down if you get them to fit around your waist because your butt isn't as... I don't know what, it's some kind of male body dynamics that starts happening where it seems like your butt is shrinking and it's all going to your belly. And then that also makes pants really difficult to wear. And so I have jeans. I just get gray jeans if I can find them. And then, but then sometimes just like khaki or gray khakis. What are they called if they're not khaki colored? What do they call those?
I don't know.
They call them khakis, right? They're called khakis even if they're not khaki colored.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's...
Is that our... Chris calling you?
Just a reminder.
But so, yeah, so there's a bunch of other things to discuss here. Can we take an intermission?
No, let's keep talking about my clothes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I would like to, but then I got to go pick up...
No, that's all I... I only wear this... I'm pretty much down to wearing the same thing all the time. Everywhere.
Oh, what are the shoes going to be for this tour?
I mean, I have vegan Doc Martin.
I just want to say, remember the day when Johnny decided, our drummer Johnny Machine, who remember we were in Montreal, and he decided he didn't want to have the skater wallet with the chain anymore because that was, everybody else had it, and he didn't want to be like that anymore. It wasn't punk rock anymore. So he took it off, and then he lost it, and then he got into a fight with a guy and got his head cut with the bottle. This is you like going, I'm not going to wear Doc Martens because they have a yellow, I don't like the yellow stitching on them. That's what Doc Martens are. They're the yellow stitching. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, okay, you have vegan Doc Martens, but you're not going to wear them because they have yellow stitching.
Well, no, I was going to say I have to start wearing. So I'm currently in my summer, still after Labor Day. Sorry, I'm not wearing socks yet. I haven't transitioned to my fall footwear. And so I don't know if I'm going to wear, I don't know if I should wear the boots.
Does New York City still have like...
If my foot pedals work, part of my shoe decision is based on whether or not I make a mistake stepping on a foot pedal, but it's not so much of an issue with poster children.
What about like ninja shoes, you know, would you wear those?
I don't think those are good for touring.
Yeah. And does New York City, like, do the streets still have puddles of pee-pee on them?
No.
It's all clean now, right?
New York is like Disneyland now.
Yeah. Okay. So we don't have to...
Brooklyn's like Disneyland now. There's no...
So we don't have to have that... Like, our feet don't have to be protected from germs.
Well, I don't know about that.
Okay. So, I mean, I really...
Then I'll be wearing a cowboy hat.
Which one? The black one or the white one?
Depending on how I'm feeling.
How you're feeling? Yeah. That's where...
And the handlebar mustache I'm growing right now.
Yeah. You think you're as cool as Greg Norton, but you're never handlebar mustache.
I was
mustache.
Thinking more of like some kind of weird Nick Cave or birthday party. What was the bass player? Had the cowboy hat and mustache first.
Okay. We got squatting. We did the tour wardrobe. What is it? Yeah, I mean,
what about you? You haven't figured anything out yet?
No, I think I'm working on the jeans motif here because I wasn't sure. Like, I don't want I don't want to look like a rock. Like, I don't want to look like a rock mom, and I'm going to anyway, so there's no way to get out of it. Like, what I used to like to wear was like, I like to dress kind of like Kim Deal or Ian MacKay. That was my thing. Like, I like the sexiness of Kim Deal mixed with like the
sexiness of Ian MacKay.
No, the utilitarianism of Ian MacKay. Now, Ian would always wear a nice, I picture him in a V-neck gray shirt, gray t-shirt, and like just shorts. That's what or the red, the burgundy. I think he had a burgundy t-shirt. And this is probably just my image of him. I don't know if this is what he used to wear or not. I can look it up on the internet, but I don't want to. But, you know, that's, and shorts, right? So, you know, you sweat, you don't have to worry about the sweat. You don't, you're not like trying to look like a heroin junkie. You know, you don't have to cover your arms and legs and stuff. You know, you don't want your arms and legs covered, or arms at least covered. Like, you don't want to look like you have to cover up like heroin holes on your arms, right? You just want to look like you're going to be running, you're going to be jogging, and you don't want to look sexy, right? You want to, like, so that was always my thing. But now I'm wondering if, you know, a person should actually wear shorts on a stage, or if that is,
yeah,
like,
I know,
approaching
my position on that.
Fish and Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, like, is that, like, is that going to be like that? So now I'm thinking I'm going to have to wear, and I had that dress though too. Remember that? I had a dress, so I could wear that, but I don't think I want to wear that. And I put a call out for proposals on the Facebook page, and I got some great feedback. But I think, yeah, I guess I just walked into a store the other day, and they had a 2-for-1 sale on these jeans, and they're like, they're higher rise jeans, and they're like tight fitting, so that they're not like gapping all over my back and stuff. I have like no hips at all. So the jeans, these jeans are kind of neat, but they're kind of tight. So I just don't know. And the t-shirt, I would wear a t-shirt of a band that I liked. I would try to do that. So for instance, my Archers of Loaf shirt now, since every picture I see of their bass player has got a Poster Children shirt on it. Okay. So that's that. I think I have to pick up a child or two.
He hasn't called.
No, he hasn't called.
Oh, he
because
can't.
His phone is downstairs and
oh,
broken.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
All right.
So can we pause it? Because there's
pause
some
it.
Other stuff to
okay.
talk. Pause it. Just go,
all
go
right.
paint a wall or something. Okay. Are we're on? We're back?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Whew. That was a nice long breather, huh? There were a bunch of, like, I'm starting to be friends with people in the playground, like other parents on the playground. They're like parents on the playground. They have all different color hair and stuff. Like one of them's got blue hair and stuff. They're cool parents. It's nice. And then Bernadette, she noticed that my hair was down instead of up. So we had a little discussion about hair and how often you wash it. You know, when you've got curly hair like Bernadette and I have curly hair. I wasn't like Bernadette and me. You've got to, you can't wash it every day, you know? So I was like trying to show off. Yeah. I haven't washed my hair in a month. I was trying.
Then she was repulsed.
No, she was impressed. But then I had to cut it down to 3 weeks. I think it was like 3 weeks or something like that. You have to, it just gets, you put stuff on it though. You know, you put oil and stuff on it. Anyway. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear about that. Okay,
they
so
might.
Where were we? There are websites. If you have curly hair, just go to the curly hair websites, and there's like all kinds of rules for how to deal with your curly hair now.
What about, is there a website for beautifully naturally straight hair?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all websites are for beautifully naturally straight hair. Naturally straight. Instead of naturally curly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I didn't know, I just started doing now was if you have curly hair, you're not supposed to touch it because it breaks constantly. So that gets it all frizzy and stuff. You notice how mine's not frizzy right now?
It's because you don't touch your hair.
Yeah, you're not supposed to touch your hair a whole lot. And then the other thing is that when you're finished washing it, when you do wash it, you're supposed to wash it in really cold water. Like you're supposed to rinse it in really, really like as freezing cold as you possibly can. And I forgot to do that last night. And I was like, trying to like put my hand through my hair, and it's just like a, like wet cotton. It's so disgusting. And it just comes out, and it's like, I don't know how to, it really is like wet cotton balls. Like the tangles are so bad. And then I was like, oh, wait, I forgot to rinse it in the freezing cold water. So I rinsed it in the freezing cold water, and then I could get my hand through it.
Why is that?
It's because the little things, like the thorns, the shafts or something that stick out of your hair, I think they compress or they go in or something like that. So that makes it slide more instead of like, it's like like thorn bushes, like catching, that's what your like curly hair is like, I guess. It's like just catches on itself constantly and just breaks. Whereas your hair is like a nice naked shaft of something.
That's right.
And doesn't tangle. Okay.
My hair would tangle if I didn't comb it.
Yeah. Mm, good. Back. Well, you comb your hair?
I do comb my hair after I rinse it out.
How often do you? You don't use soap either, do you?
Not on my hair anymore.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. I just run water through
it. How do you stop from getting lice? Don't lice just spontaneously come into your hair from not using soap?
Shampoo.
Yeah.
So I am down to just Dr. Bronner's Baby Mild unscented soap.
On your hair?
No.
On your face?
Just on my whole body, yeah.
You're like the girl in Safe. You're like Julianne Moore.
It's not.
Rick's got his own little bubble that he lives in at home. And he doesn't, when he showers, he wears clothes, just like I said last time.
It's not. He's
allergic to everything.
I'm not allergic to anything. I just, I don't, the, yeah, I don't have, I
do you wash your hair with, do you wash your hair with Vaseline? I'm sorry, not your hair, your face with Vaseline?
Do I wash it with Vaseline?
Yeah.
No.
Do you wash it with Aquaphor?
No.
Okay.
Dr. Bronner's Baby Mild soap.
Weren't you washing it with like oil for a while or Vaseline?
Oh, I tried that. Yeah, no, that didn't work.
Especially with the beard, probably.
No, the beard was fine. Beard actually makes things better. Now that I've shaved, it's the same old problem.
Does your face feel cold now that you've shaved?
No.
One of the grads said that she didn't know who you were when you came in the room. And she was like, who is that?
The hell?
And she thought there was something wrong with you. It wasn't one of the, she was like what's wrong with
Rick? I was sick?
Yeah. Like, look, where's his facial hair? Did it fall out? Is he balding on his chin? She didn't say that.
Did he lose his beard wig? His beard toupee?
All right. So all that's left here is, the squatting. Christian Fontenbaum. Fontenbaum. The relevance of squatting in 2016. With what possible community benefits and harm?
Well, definitely the sort of American-style toilet is not healthy for the digestive system.
And
your pipeline should do some form of squatting or kind of simulate squatting you're on the toilet. You don't have to buy that expensive shelf thing. It's like if you had kids and they're tall enough to reach the sink now, but you still have that little footstool, you can put your feet up on the footstool and that helps simulate the squatting position.
It helps simulate it, but I straddle the seat when I go. I just put one foot on one side of the seat and the other foot on the other side of the seat, and just that's how I squat. Is that what he meant, you think?
No. Yeah, and so for us, we've always lived as adults in small Midwestern towns where squatting is not
squatting is what you do over the toilet.
Yeah, not even that. It's not. It's just not something that happens that much. It's more of an urban phenomena. It's tough to say.
We're not authorities on this at all. So we don't know. Although didn't Christiania just close?
And I don't mean to totally sideline the discussion, but this. So in Bloomington, our town, they've entered into a contract with an Indiana company to do to supply fiber optic here in town, and that company just published its map of where they're putting in fiber optic, and there's a huge blank spot on the map. Which is basically where poor people live in Bloomington, and they've apparently decided without talking to the town or anything, well, we're not gonna supply fiber optic to this part of town because there are not gonna be enough people to pay for it, I guess, is what their thought is. Even though there are schools in that part of town and people who live there with families, and so this is my thing. So like going back to squatting, it's kind of like, oh, well, Well, if somebody owns the property, they have a right, you know, and if, oh, why should somebody be able to take over a building if it's not theirs, you know? And it's like, well, it's that common discussion about community, right? There's another side of it, which is like, well, if you have an empty abandoned building or a building that's not being used, and then someone takes it over and starts using it in a positive way, which is basically any use for a building besides leaving it abandoned is a positive way, that helps the community, right? But so, yeah, the relevance in 2016 is just that, like, we're in this kind of crazy free market world where even though somebody gets the contract to supply a what I would consider a utility to a community, they're not treating it as a utility. They're treating it as a market, a free market. And yet, it's not a free market. It's not like we have people competing to do the fiber optic here in town. It's one company is going to do the supply fiber optic,
right?
High speed internet. And so my big frustration now is that, and I haven't heard the comments yet. I know the mayor's pissed off, but I'm sure there's somebody saying, well, if they don't make money on it, why should they put it in there? You know, or if they don't make money in this part of town, why should they even supply the high speed? Because they should only have to put it into places where they get a profitable number of people using it. And that to me is not a definition of community. That's the definition of a free market. And then if it's the definition, if you're using a free market definition, then why do you even have community authorized utility? You know what I mean?
Is that what the fiber optic is?
I think it is, but other people don't. And yeah, so this is a problem. Like, we went to Chattanooga. We talk about Chattanooga all the time. It's like that time we went to Chattanooga a couple years ago, and we're like, why the hell? Like, the last time I had been to Chattanooga, I think we played a show there once, right? But, and then when I was a kid, was the world, oh no, it was in Knoxville, but it was just like, but I think we went to Chattanooga too, and it was just like this, you know, old kind of old town, right? That didn't seem to have much going on. And then we go there a few years ago, and it's like, holy crap, there are parades, there are all these tech companies, they're like, you know.
The bridges were painted different colors and stuff, and there were fireworks going on.
People living in warehouse spaces, and like, what the F's going on? And
people
it's like,
living
oh,
in warehouses, expensive
yeah,
warehouses.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, they did that high-speed internet. They invested, you know, the city did. But all of these companies now are suing to make sure that communities don't do that. Right? You know about this?
No.
Is that, yeah, like, either at some point or it's already going to be sort of against the law for a community to in certain, I think it's in certain states already, but it may be an FCC thing. No, the FCC is no longer going to weigh in on it, I think is what happened. But basically the cable company internet service provider says, it's not fair. It's not fair. You can't, a city can't supply high speed internet in competition with us. And so it's actually like in certain states, I think, at least now, like a city couldn't decide, well, we don't have high-speed internet. We don't have fiber. We're going to invest in it to help our community. You won't be able to do that. So, even if assholes, you know. So, of course, Comcast isn't going to put that in unless they have to, right? Because competition, right? Free market. Again, free market. But it's like, oh, but the community can't say, well, you know what? You're not going to. So there was something in the New York Times about a small town where this manufacturer just built a whole processing facility or something, and it's totally dependent on high-speed data transmission. And because that town, basically, the town down the road invested, and they said, hey, we'll pay you a certain amount to get the pipeline extended, basically. And so this company's like, oh, great, now we have this high-speed connection so we can do all of our warehousing and tracking and all this kind of stuff. So it was good for the economy of the town. But now there's, you know, all these cable companies, internet service providers are saying, no, you can't do that. And so this town may lose its, you know, small manufacturing company, because they'll have to do stuff again. The problem was they were struggling because they couldn't use their software using just like regular Wi-Fi, and, you know, like whatever you have in a small town, it's like satellite, you know, kind of Wi-Fi, which is really unreliable. Oh, so frustrating.
All right. Well.
So, yeah, I think it is. It is, you know, not relevant. It's not that it's not relevant. It's that this freaking free market craziness has gotten so crazy that people question the idea of a service for everyone. It's like, and dividing it up. So it's not even, so now it's like, well, why do you even talk to a town? It's just like, oh, well, we're only going to put fiber optic in the rich part of town. Like, what if our part of town, you know, isn't quite profitable enough for them? You know, it is, I think, because we're on the map.
We moved here because of this area. We moved here because of the school. We moved here because we live in an area where, with very old, like 100-year-old houses, really beautiful old houses. Okay. And not, you know, the lawns are not nice. It's not like we live on a Grove Street. Okay. Not a, Anthony Harper Ballyhoo Bobble Kumquat Lane. Okay, we live on Grove Street next to Washington Street, you know? It's like we live in the center, the old center of town. And you know, with a whole bunch of other, you know, wacky. Yeah.
You're just saying we don't live in a newer neighborhood, but it's
still. We don't
live
in a newer neighborhood, newer, richer neighborhood.
Somewhat affluent, so.
It's an affluent neighborhood, or somewhat affluent. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I always talk about this where your mom lives. It's like, you know, beautiful, beautiful suburban area in Western Springs, right? Yeah, we all know that you're from Western Springs because we have a song called Western Springs, right? But there's like, there's no sidewalk in front of their house, but their neighbors have got a sidewalk. Like, and
two
the sidewalk,
down.
Two doors down, the sidewalk just ends. It just ends. And there's grass. So if you want to walk down the block, you want to walk around the block, you can walk on sidewalk for a while, and then you get to a house that has chosen not to put sidewalk in front of it, and there's no sidewalk.
So this is what I'm talking about.
You have
about.
To walk
it's
on
like
the person's lawn.
Some people decided they didn't want to. So it was like you could get a sidewalk if you pitched in some money, right? The city was going to pay for part of the sidewalk cost of it, but then you would get the expense. And the idea was that they were going to, you know, put sidewalks in this whole neighborhood. And some people did not like that idea. They didn't want sidewalks. And they were unhappy that the majority of people wanted sidewalks and were willing to pay for it, but not everybody wanted to. And so the solution was that, if you want a sidewalk in front of your house, you can pony up part of the money, and we pony up part of the money. And so, yeah, you have this patchwork quilt where it's like you walk in front of two houses and then you fall on your face. Into the next person's yard.
You're walking in the person's grass. It's hysterical. That's the metaphor.
Totally.
Yeah. I bring this up every third Radio Zero. It's amazing. You know, look at your street. If you have sidewalks on your street, imagine if some of them just the house and just imagine that the sidewalk in front of one of the houses just ended and then started up again at the next house. And that's what this neighborhood looks like. And I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful neighborhood too. It's hysterical. All right, so we're almost done.
Something like that happened with Champagne and the streetlights, right? It's
right,
like the
yeah,
rich people
yeah.
got new streetlights yeah. before other people even got streetlights. And then it was like a whole complaint about who's paying for what and how come they got streetlights and we didn't. And how come you're getting the expensive streetlights? Oh, maybe we can have somebody. I don't even remember how it was resolved. But it's getting this idea of community to the point of where it's like, no, I'm not in a. I'm in a community when it profits me or benefits me, you know? And it's like, but as soon as I have to, you know, pay a little bit of extra money that not only does me benefit, but does somebody else benefit, I'm not going to do it.
You're, does your house have a sidewalk in front of it though?
No, my mom didn't. And it, my mom was not strongly opinion. I'm trying to remember if my dad was still alive when this happened, but it was kind of more keeping peace with the neighbors thing, I think. I'm not absolutely positive.
Been,
so it's kind of like,
it. Yeah.
Just trying not to, yeah,
With your parents, it probably was like an aesthetic decision to not mess with the neighbors, like
it's also,
to fit in.
So
with
this
the neighbors.
Is the thing. It's a neighborhood. It's half, you know, people who have been there for 50 years, 40 years, who don't have kids. And then the other half is, you know,
teardowns.
Well, not even teardowns, but yeah, new houses with families with kids. But then some of them don't, their kids are never outside anyways, or they're in the backyard. They're not on the sidewalk. And so, and I, you know, they didn't have sidewalks when I was a kid. That whole neighborhood never had sidewalks. So, I did fine.
Okay.
But also, people didn't blow through that street like it was a super highway when I was a kid, and now it's like it actually makes sense to have a sidewalk because of how much.
People drive really fast down that street. Yeah, I've noticed that.
A-holes. It's just because so it's the first street after the overpass that, you know, the other streets have dead ends, but it's not, you know, there's a major street two blocks down, but no, you got it. It's kind of like our street
where
we live here in Bloomington. Yeah. It's like our street is not the main artery, but it's one block away from it. So people blow down it as fast as they possibly can.
You know what? If we just had a stop sign put on our sidewalk, on our corner, then people wouldn't be able to do that. We should just get a stop sign.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
Why don't you get to work on that?
Yeah, no.
Like it.
All right. Meanwhile, all right. So last but not least, we have Sandra saying, I would like to hear about the I don't drink and how on edge drinkers get about it. So that's good. Take up the next 2 days. And Chris, so where did this even come from? It's like... Oh, I said, yeah, and somebody asked too. I think I wrote on here, it'd probably be better if I drank, because I was frustrated. Yeah, sometimes I think it might be better if I drank. And I was waiting for somebody to go, hey, water, or something. But no, there's plenty of, a discussion that rivaled the old time P-Kids List discussions. It was really, really cool. It's... just people talking about how they, you know, their how much they drink and whether they drink and stuff like that. It was really, really neat. And people doing some some introspection.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's neat. Oh, so, but
you haven't really.
Yeah. I said I wish I drank. Yeah. Cause I had to write some kind of, a long thing, you know, I started thinking as I was writing that, like, I was getting so kind of torn up inside about what I was writing that, I was thinking that, you know, maybe this is why people drink alcohol while they're writing. I think I've heard of this.
You were writing.
Yeah. Writing.
And yeah.
And I wasn't happy with what I was writing and it was a difficult subject.
Turn off the
negative, emotions. Yeah. Yeah.
Negative things, and so drinking would be a way to do that.
I'd never tried it, but I heard that there are other authors
drunk authors,
right? Exactly, that's why they drink, right?
They drink to help themselves write. I think they
drink in spite. What? Yeah. No, they probably drink to help themselves write, right?
Maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
I can't make a.
You don't know either because you don't drink either. So then there's a whole, like, so, you know, there's the whole straight edge thing. And then people saying that, oh, I used to be straight edge, but I'm not anymore. And regretting it, too. Regretting that, you know, so some people like Chris, you know, very publicly stated here that that he was very straight edge back in the day. And now he's sad that he was. You know, he feels like he missed out on some stuff. So
yeah. And so this is, I drank a little bit. Tried it out. It did not fit my personality or my social, like, I was already not comfortable in social situations, and drinking, especially drinking with college age men when I was drinking, did not make anything about that environment better. It actually made it worse. It made them stupider and made them, it was just, it made it even less fun for me, right? It was not a social lubricant for me, let's just say. It was basically like, and obviously I was hanging out with the wrong people, like when I was a freshman or whatever, but it was just like, wow, this is like amplified stupid jock stuff, which I already hate. And so that, and not to say that anybody, so again,
my nothing whole family, wrong with it.
Yeah, I'm my whole family, you know, my parents,
your whole family drinks.
Yeah, everybody drinks,
but they're not alcoholics.
Yeah, they're not, yeah, right.
Not alcoholics.
As far as I know, no one has a drinking problem, right? It's you know, classic, you know, social drinking kind of, yeah, drinking at family picnics and Thanksgiving and at night, you know, at a party kind of stuff. It's not, you know, a sort of permanent part of life. So for me, but it was just kind of like, I'm not enjoying this, and it doesn't make me feel better, and it doesn't make my life better. Why would I continue doing this? But unfortunately, I always find that other people sometimes, and it's not everybody, but other people who have guilt issues associated with alcohol consumption, right? So I you know, my mom would not have a problem with me drinking. She'd probably be like, wow, I've never seen you drink before. Why are you drinking now? Now there would probably be a problem. It'd be like, what changed?
Yeah, you know,
it would just be like, if all of a sudden shaved but my head brother, or something, it would just be a thing that would raise questions, but it wouldn't be because there was some kind of, you know, moral. It was never a moral issue in my family.
Yeah, and right? Same with mine too. Yeah. With mine, you know, we're Jews, so we grew up, you know, drinking wine at Passover and stuff like that. You'd have a sip of wine. That was never like, ooh, wine is bad.
Yeah.
Although my mom,
yeah, mom had, yeah, but the more, this sounds pretentious, but like the kind of more European or like, you know, just kind of like healthy attitude about it.
Yeah.
I feel like we both grew up in that environment, and then it was just like something that I didn't enjoy, didn't like it. But also part of, at least some people, it's a reaction to a much more restrictive kind of environment. And that was always a problem I had, where it was like, I'm not straight edge. I'm not anything. It's not for me. But then if somebody is a little bit conflicted about it, sometimes they feel they read much more into it than it could be an empathy thing too, where it's just kind of like, well, I felt guilty about drinking, and now here's somebody who doesn't drink, and it makes the guilt more complex. That was that's the only time I really run into issues. I don't feel like I'm a judgmental person.
Oh, yeah, it's the same with the vegetarianism too. It's like people who have a little bit of, you feel a little bit bad about eating meat, we got to listen to you talk forever about how you only eat meat. You would never eat meat except this happens, or you got sick, or your husband makes you have to make meat for him, or something like everybody. Oh my God, you never, I mean, and I don't want to hear about that at all. I just let me not eat meat and stuff. And somebody said, you know, their mom has, you know, says it's a pain in the ass to feed their brother who's a vegetarian. And yeah, it would be a pain. Like if I was a mom and I was cooking meat dinners for everybody, and then one of my kids, you know, refused to eat the meat. Yeah, that would be a pain in the ass. It's totally a
but
pain.
But you know what? It's a pain in the ass to feed kids anyways.
Yeah. But then you got to make, it's just, you know, how you're like, oh, how come you make three meals every night? You know, it would be the same thing. So, but we are vegetarians too, you know, and we don't judge anybody. We force our kids to eat meat because they won't eat all the, you know, we worry about their protein intake and stuff like that. But yeah, about the drinking and for me, I tried it too. I tried it I did my experiment on it once at my parents' house. My mom had lots of wine around. So one night I think I was watching Doctor Who. I'm sure I talked about this on Radio Zero, right? Or something stupid like that. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take a drink every half hour.
Oh, okay. It's fine. You don't drink, whatever. But now you're watching Doctor Who. You're saying Doctor Who is stupid. No. What the hell?
Yeah. So I took a drink like every half hour, and then I wrote down, I recorded how I felt. And then at the end, I threw up. And the next morning, I woke up and I told, you know, my told my dad what I did, and he said, "You're a very strange child."
Yeah, and that's the reality.
That's what he said. Yeah, you know,
it's like I have grown accustomed to the fact, or it became very obvious very early on, that I'm not a, you know, I'm not a normal person, whatever that means. And I know no one's normal, but it's like,
yeah, but you're especially not normal.
Yeah, it's just kind of like I'm not going to do this even if I feel pressure to do it. It's just like, ugh, I'm not interested. I don't give a shit. And, you know, and please don't make me into a proxy for your strange, restrictive, fundamentalist upbringing. Because I'm not a fundamentalist. You know, I've just made some choices in my life, and there are things I don't want to do, and I just don't do them. And it's not even, I'm not saying that from a pretentious point of view either. It's like, I'm
well, you may
aware.
Be, you may be.
Well, I don't feel you may like
be,
I am.
Yeah, you may be pretentious. You wouldn't know if you were pretentious. You're totally probably pretentious. Totally probably
pretentious. Maybe I'm misusing the word. But it's kind of like, I don't exclude myself from other people because I feel like I'm superior to them. If I exclude myself,
it's
because, well, if the only thing we have in common is that we drink beer together and I don't drink beer, it's going to be really hard for me to hang out with
actually
you.
Yeah, and this is you know, there we have a neighborhood association, and I haven't been to really any of the things because they are like drinking events. They're like getting together and drinking wine events, and like I can't. There's like I'm missing like a women power, university women's power, or local community women's power night thing. And I was like, I got a flyer for it. I was like, ooh, maybe I should go to this because I'm a woman and I'm powerful. And then, you know, it's like at a local wine bar, and I'm like, I don't know. I have no problem calling myself straight edge. I mean, unless having drank alcohol twice in my life means that I can't, unless you're like one of those people, then yeah, then I'm not straight edge. But the thing I like about it, and you know, sorry, Ian. I know Ian's like horrified. I'd love to pin him down like in my presence about and talk to him about this one day.
Oh yeah, he doesn't have to talk to enough.
I know
people
he's got to talk
it.
To everybody about it, and I know there's interviews everywhere probably about it. But if it really as a kid or like yeah as a kid in high school when there was peer pressure to drink. And you just felt like an ass for not drinking. You felt like a geek. You were a dweeb and everything like that. Let me finish. For somebody, for there to be a movement that was cool, that you didn't, you know, you could say, no, I'm not going to drink. And that's okay because there are all these other cool people who don't drink also. That's a choice I can make and not be a dweeb.
Yeah,
then
it's
I like that.
Outcast,
yes.
Simply for not.
Yeah. I love that. So I'd be happy to, you know, I'll draw an X on my hand when we play. I'm totally fine with that because I want, so that to me, that's teaching. And I just had to write a whole teaching portfolio. So I've been thinking about teaching, and I do this all the time. And I want to say, hey, that's okay. And it's okay, you know, to drink too, but it's okay to not drink too.
And so I'm sure I've told this story before, but like, so in high school, and a friend who was popular, you know, said, hey, you want to go to this party? And I was like, okay, but will there be drinking there? That's exactly what I said. Oh, no. And so we show up at this party, and the host, the guy who's putting on the party, his house, is like in the middle of the room, living room, crying. And their friends around him. And it's like everybody's like all crazy, and there's beer everywhere. And it's like, what happened? And it's like, oh, his older brother came in and started beating him up because he was having a party and he wasn't supposed to, and everything that like that. So it was like, I had no interest in you know,
that
drinking and going, yeah, being in that kind of party environment. And then when I actually went, it was a freaking nightmare. It was just like, it wasn't fun. It was like just
walking
into this.
Well, you should have gone to another one. The next one, you might have gotten laid,
you
know?
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing is it's like there have been very few times where...
drinking has been associated with you.
With a good time for me, you know? It's just kind of like... Like a lot of times, and maybe it's because I'm not drinking too, right? It's like, but even when I was, you know, trying it out a little bit, it was just like, ugh, you know, I don't even want to talk about it. But
and,
yeah,
okay,
like getting dragged through a muddy field by two other drunk guys, you know, my like roommates. Fun. It's like, oh, great. Yeah. Okay. Wow. So you're assholes and you're even bigger assholes when you're drinking. And if I drink with you, you're going to be assholes to me. In a much more intense asshole-y way, you know, and it's, and again, you can say, oh, well, that's, you know, it's different than hanging out with your friends and having a bottle of wine. And yeah, that's true, but it's just kind of like, ah.
I'm glad I'm married to you, because I, who else, like, who the hell else in the world is, I know there's probably, well, there's some Mormons around that don't drink also.
And, you know, yeah, I definitely have a coffee problem. It's not like,
yeah, we drink coffee. Yeah.
I don't, I definitely, you know, it's, I guess I probably don't need another lifestyle, product in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about that too.
Caffeine has played such an integral part in my life that to add alcohol into it would be just too much, too many vices to maintain and pay for.
So there now you've heard two people who don't drink talking about why they don't drink, which has got to be the most boring, stupid thing ever. But that's
honestly.
And I'm not a person also, and so I'm not a person who is like, no, I will never try this. I will never try that. You know, I've tried these things, and yeah, just for me, just waking up in the morning is a mind blowing experience for me. So just dealing with how I perceive everything without any other sorts of enhancements besides coffee. Yeah, is mind blowing to me. So I haven't, once I get used to that, I suppose I would try drinking. Although, yeah, and I have alcoholism in my family, so. And not, you know, I have, what do you call that when they're not alcoholic anymore? Dead? No. What do you call when they're, but I have, like, there was alcoholism in my family anymore, and then it had thankfully stopped. But I do look back on that and think, you know, I think, well, wouldn't want to be like that, you know? So yeah, that's, I have extra baggage there. So there you go, Sandra. So again, I can't imagine what it's like to have like sort of a wonder about how much you drink, or thinking about how much you drink, and then have to listen to us spewing about this, which is why probably we never talked about it. But it's, I mean, the conversations that went on my Facebook page here about, you know, about drinking and addiction and how, you know, drink, yeah, like maybe partying will help, John Fine wrote here, you know, and stuff like that.
And that's funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
This is the thing, is like when it becomes a moral argument, that's where it all breaks down for me, because I'm not really interested in moral arguments about this kind of stuff, you know. And so that's the problem, is my choice about drinking is not based on a moral choice. I don't feel like it's not a moral choice for me. And
yeah.
And so that's the problem, is sometimes people get harmed by other people who basically tell you that the way you are is wrong because you're violating the rules. And so when somebody says that to you about drinking, right, and then there's somebody who's not drinking, it's hard not to filter. I totally understand. But yeah, for me, it's not that I'm taking some kind of high road and I feel like I'm morally superior, because that's not the kind
of, we don't feel morally superior.
But other people do. I know other people do. And that's a problem to me. But you know what? Our whole society is filled with and
so
multiple
John,
cultures. We're doing pretty good though, at least. We're starting to be more tolerant of people who make individual choices, or are not even individual choices, are just different, right? Are not exactly like how someone is supposed to be, a normal person is supposed to be. So I think we're progressing. Unfortunately, it's, the progression is filled with conflict, a lot of birthing pains in order to accept everyone's that everyone's a unique snowflake as opposed to everyone's a generic.
Well, I think once we get that wall built next year, it'll be awesome. Right. Keep. But here, this is funny too. John Fine in this whole thing wrote in capital letters, "Rose, are you holding?" So I didn't know what that meant. So I wrote, "I don't know the pot terminology. You left that out of your book." And then he wrote back. He wrote, "There's a glossary in the audiobook." It's just such a great sentence.
Yeah.
So, all right.
It's funny.
It is funny. Good. Are we done? Is that? Oh, no, that was another. No, we're starting to get interviews now. So that was an interview question. Yeah, not for Radio Zero. All right. Anything else?
No, that wound up being much longer with the break.
Did you? You didn't pause it during the break?
No, but that's okay. People
you just let it
just go
on.
Along, do their business, and then come back and hear us talking again.
I like drove to the library, and you know, and actually, you know, I was worried about Graham calling in, you know, saying needing a ride. Chris Schneberger, if you're still listening to this, as you all know, his phone is broke and it's downstairs here. But I dropped him off at the library, and as I thought to myself, oh, how's he gonna, you know, he'll just email us. But I noticed on my Facebook that Graham Valentin is now live on Facebook, so you can watch him playing over Lord or Overcast or Overboard or whatever it is that he plays. Overwatch. You can watch him live.
Yeah.
So we'll know when he needs a ride home. Thanks for listening. Come see our show on whatever day it is.
Check the website.
Yeah, I'm done.